Some of our members are small business owners, and they know the secret to success is usually just that, a secret. So we built American Express Open Forum, an online community that helps our members connect and share ideas to make smart business decisions. We built this for our members, but we made it open for everyone. Connect at openforum.com. This is what membership is. This is what membership does.
All of the podcasts here at the Sideshow Network are now at the touch of a button on your iPhone and iPad. With the new Sideshow Network app, tune into all your favorite podcasts here at the Sideshow Network. Go to iTunes App Store, search for Sideshow Network, and download our free app to stream all of your favorite Sideshow Network podcasts at any time you want. The top comedians in the world are at your fingertips with the Sideshow Network app for iPhone and iPad.
It's time for another Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
So welcome, everybody, to another episode of Innovation Crush, the series where we talk about some of the most innovative marketing, products, people, and whatever else that comes to mind in the marketplace. So with us today is a gentleman by the name of Mark Brogdon. You want to say hello, Mark?
Hello, everybody. I'm excited to be here. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. You sound so professional. And to my right is Robert. He is our one-man band. There he goes. I knew it. So we're just going to kick this right off because I've known Mark for a while. He's a great guy, really smart, really creative. And I want to kick this off with the first question, which is, what is the Mark Brogdon personal brand?
Well, we are a experiential marketing firm, and my brand seeks to always go forward in everything we do. We're very futuristic. We've been on the cutting edge of innovation for the last 15 years. We did product integration when that wasn't really a buzzword. We try to create buzzwords. We try to live in that lane.
So how did you get started, right? Like, you know, I really admire your journey, right? You started off, as far as I know, an experiential. Have recently made a shift into some big technology plays. But kind of just give us that history and some of the brands you've worked with and what your approach to your work is.
Well, I'm going to start off by saying I'm from Detroit, Michigan.
Woo! So,
yeah, Detroit, Michigan.
I made a really bad Detroit joke on the last show, and I actually felt bad after I said it, and then I was like, that's my own home.
When we talk. Oh, you're from Detroit. Okay.
Well, you knew this. Come on.
Good radio, dude. Good radio. So growing up in Detroit, and as we all know, Detroit has just filed for bankruptcy, and I think that...
Oh, wait, we're not cheering for that. Sorry.
I think that... I will cheer for it because I think it's a chance to press restart, and I think that it shows the resilience of the city, and you'll see what we do with it, and I think that's the history of my career. With that background and upbringing, I think we are resilient people, and you know that growing up in Michigan. So we...
Definitely.
You know, we rub rocks and become diamonds, and then start. So you know how we do it. So I initially came from Detroit, Michigan, with a degree from Michigan State University.
Spartans!
Spartans! We are Spartans! And I'll kick a competitor into the black hole if I need to
get it. Or in the black hole, which is a whole other show.
That's my 300 reference. So I went and studied international and global marketing at the University of Stockholm in Sweden. Studied company.
What was that like? So what was that like, just kind of making that transition from Detroit and then, you know, I don't know if it was suddenly, but did you go directly from Michigan State to Stockholm? And what was that like, even culturally? Because I'm sure that has an effect on how you see the world now, you know,
truly,
especially as you developed your career.
Yeah, growing up again, a small city, we're in Michigan, it was an amazing transition. I mean, they speak English, fortunately. Most of the people speak English. They learn three languages, so, you know, that wasn't the challenge.
What are the other challenge. Two? English, Stockholmish, and then what's
the... Yeah, well, Swedish.
Okay.
And then... whatever the third choice would be.
They get to choose.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the good thing is that, you know, that transition wasn't hard. It was probably the mental transition of, I am so far away from home right now. You know, I can't just, mom, I'm homesick. I want to come home for, you know, do my laundry.
Right.
That was done. This was 2 days after I graduated from college. So,
oh, wow. You literally like took your diploma and got
I
on
graduated on Saturday. Sunday morning, I took a flight to New York and had a 6-hour layover. I fell asleep on the plane from New York to Iceland and woke up in Stockholm 13, 14 hours later and didn't really know where my hostel was. So it was one of those wake up right now and let's see how you're going to deal with this. And
wow.
So I, you know, we studied with ASEA Robotics, Tetra Pak, Volvo, Saab, Marabou Chocolates, and we learned a lot about international marketing. We learned even as far as CAD-CAM, we learned about the unions, working relationships between the manufacturers and their employees. We learned, so it was a good transition for me, but what it did better than anything, it opened up my whole mindset to, I'm not a business guy. I'm not training to be a business guy. I'm training to be a global business guy.
Like Jay-Z said, I'm not a businessman. I'm a business man.
That's a very good reference.
Yes, thank you.
Perfect. Perfect.
I didn't even have it in my notes.
Exactly. And for good reason. But, you know, I, from that point forward, my whole mindset was when I look at business, and this is where I look at business to this day, is, you know, does it translate in all languages, all cultures? And if it doesn't, what is the nucleus of it that can be translatable? So that's the way I look at business now.
Right. So give us an example, an early example, right, in your career where you actually put that, you know, that philosophy to work.
Well, my first major job, I worked at Pepsi Cola and Pitney Bowes. So I consider my start of my career really was Carlson Resource Group, and that I was the national spokesperson and product specialist for Saturn. So I was actually brought to California,
not the planet, the car manufacturer.
Hey, however you want to roll, baby.
just clarifying for Robert.
Yeah, no, it was an automotive company, Saturn, and so it was the very first automotive manufacturer, all American manufacturer in 65 years. So it was a healthy weight on your shoulders to be responsible for product marketing for this brand new car company. And so I think what I looked at is, although we're translating this as and promoting this as an all-American car company, the only thing that wasn't American was a steel timing chain I think the glass. And so I had to look at beyond the borders, you know, how do we communicate that we would also sell this car as foreign car manufacturers have, you know, penetrated the American marketplace. How can we do the same thing with our car when we're not a muscle car? Because muscle cars do well internationally.
Right.
But how is this car going to translate? So I wanted to get out our core values, and I looked at that DNA, and I was able to successfully get the mindset, at least domestically, and then look at the beyond the borders of how we could sell this thing.
So that, I mean, that kind of transitions into another point that's not on my notes, but you know, I look at you as a super creative guy, right? And especially when it comes to ideas. And I think you just touched on something where, you know, I want to ask you, where do good ideas come from, right? Because, you know, a lot of people are like, well, come up with something blue sky, and then it doesn't match brand principles. It doesn't match audience expectation. There's a lot that goes into making a good idea real. Mm-hmm. What is your approach to that? You started to touch on it with, like, yes, you look at the brand principles. What's the nucleus? Can you just expand on that a little bit?
I think was fortunate, and we were talking about my background. I have now a background. I went to work for Disney Channel, Disney ABC Networks for 10 years.
Why do all those kids go crazy?
Over the brand?
No, I mean the Disney
stars.
Yes, the Disney stars.
Oh,
well, I mean,
are you not allowed to even answer that question?
I don't know if I know the answer, but I know that I can only imagine what that answer would be. So again, this is not based on anything other than my opinion.
Right.
Message.
So, that is his disclaimer.
That's my disclaimer.
Walt,
but you know, you think about it. If you are in a box as a kid, you're not able to explore who you are because the eyes of the world are saying you have to be wholesome. You are a brand. You're protecting our brand. At some point, you're going to implode. And now you want to rebel and say, I am not this wholesome, you know, kid that the world has perceived me in. I want to do more.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't have a circuit breaker, I mean, you know, hopefully you have a good upbringing. But if your parents are now caught into the system just like you are, then they're no help.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, at some point that pressure cooker may blow. And you hope that it's something that's salvageable, but if not, you see the results of it. And that's kid. That's kid.
You should be the on staff psychiatrist for some of these kids. That was really good.
Just an observation. Message.
Message. No. So sorry to derail that, but no. You started off, working with the Disney Channel. Again.
Yeah. So I launched three networks. We're not totally responsible, but worked with the distribution, creating distribution strategies for Toon Disney, the repositioning of Disney Channel, and then SoapNet, and left there and went into e-commerce with Shaquille O'Neal and ran Dunk.net, which was his e-commerce company. Left there and started my own firm, Into You, the letter N, the numeral 2, the letter U, Creative Marketing Group.
Is that, did you want to say .com? Go.
You
go.
You just did. I appreciate it. I say all that to say, given my background, and answer your question and bring that book back full circle. 20 plus years of experience in a diverse in diverse industries has led me to understand how to create 360-degree touch points. So when I look at a nucleus of an opportunity, I draw upon all my experiences to make sure that I'm touching everything and all consumers in every direction. That could be from an experiential standpoint that I may have done with Disney, or that may be from an advertising messaging that I did with Carol H. Williams or some of the other agencies. So it's important that, you know, when you look at a project, you don't just look at it in such a small myopic view. You have to really understand that you're touching people in a variety of ways. As you know, I still consult with Walt Disney Imagineering now, and I consult with them on multi-generational marketing, multicultural marketing, and global trend marketing. And so multi-generational is really, you know, you're talking about Gen Ys, Gen Xs, baby boomers, and so you have to know
it's
the
a family. It's a family brand, right? So you, and I think we had touched on this in another conversation, was that, yes, you have to appeal to grandpa as much as you appeal to Robert, as much as you appeal to the 6-year-old that's, you know, that Robert's going to take to the park. But no, just like, how does that, that's a big job, right? Like, it's a big job to, what is, you know, to find the common thread with all those generations for a, you know, a giant company like a Disney.
It's next to impossible, but you have to do the best you can as a company, because you have to understand the economics of global financial. At one point, it's going to change from another period. So if you're a marketing person who's been at the company 15 years and you were successful in this era, then all of a sudden a new administration comes in and we go through a recession, depression. And now we have a baby boomer living with a Gen X, Gen Y, or, you know, the boomerang generation, which they come live with their great grandparents and their grandparents. And you have 4 generations in a household. Because of economics, that may not have been the case 5 years ago.
Right.
So when you have those many
so it's constantly shifting dynamics within the family ecosystem.
And you have to be conscious of it, because there are some commonalities, but there are some differences. There are some trust issues. So there is the 9/11 generation who are security oriented. So when they go to the park, they're always looking for the exit. You know, I want to make sure that I know how to get out of here if anything goes down.
It's also like my background in Detroit. I'm always looking for, like, if anything's going down, I need to figure out how to get out of here.
Hey, I looked at it when I came in here right now. Still looking at it. See, I have my back to the door. Like, Robert must be from the safety generation. Yeah, yeah.
Like, where do you go?
So, you know, we're conscious of all of the changing shifts in economics and trends, which is very important, because, you know, when they say 40 is a new 30, well, I think 40 and 50 are the new 20 and 25, with plastic surgery and
science, really, like
science
and medicine,
technology.
Yeah.
Technology has really, really found a way to do what I call age compression. So older people want to be younger, and younger people want to be older.
That's a great
older.
Phrase.
You think Instagram filters help a lot with that?
I think Instagram filters, I think all filters help with that. You see my face shot at Mark Brogdon on Facebook. I think you'll see that I'm
with a C, not a K, by the way.
M-A-R-C,
right.
B-R-O-G-D-O. in into you, Creative Marketing Group. I think you'll see that with good use of my filters, I'm a handsome guy.
You're still handsome, though. You're still handsome.
Where the crickets come from?
I was like, well, no, but yeah, no, you're a good looking fellow. You know, if I might say so myself from a masculine, you know, standpoint.
Is that your foot under the table?
No, it's not. It's not my foot. It's definitely not my foot. So what I was going to get into is, you know, you're looking at these big pictures, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and eventually you have to compress, to use your word, compress that information down into tangible bite sizes, right? If you go in and you pitch, I'm just making this up, you go in and pitch Pepsi and you've looked at this whole 360 degree landscape, like what, kind of walk us through the art of the pitch, right? Because it's one thing to think of it. It's another thing to tell somebody and get them excited about it. Because a lot of people get lost in like, what are you talking about? Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's going to be a portion of the audience that just watched you, you know, listen to you talk about the generational, you know, phrasings and differences. And they're like, wow, that's, you know, it's overwhelming. So walk us through the art of the pitch.
Well, I will tell anybody that I'm mentoring, that I'm teaching, or that I work with, do your homework, first of all, because you have to understand the properties of that brand. You can't go in with a one-size-fits-all approach to working with any client. Once you do that, and that's why my company is called Into You.
I love this. This is my favorite show.
So with that, you know, we named it that primarily because we try to get out of the box and go directly into the heart and core of the consumer and understand the brand properties of the client. So the most important thing is when you do your homework, Pepsi has a rich history. And although they've shifted a little bit, they've stayed true to the foundation. Same thing with most consumer brands.
Right.
When you lose, a good example would be Old Spice. If you try to deviate so far from what the brand core elements are, you know, you're going to lose a whole loyalty factor.
Right.
Even though you think it's slick and it's fun, maybe you'll see what we call a bell curve. So you'll see people jump on and they'll jump right back off because the things that made you successful aren't the things that you're promoting, just trying to be a trend.
Right.
So I look at really what is the DNA of the company, and then I start building the sexiness around that DNA. Now I make it relevant. I don't go the other way. I don't try to make it relevant, then hope I hit on some of the valuable points. I go straight mm-hmm. to the core of the DNA.
And it's, again, just how does that work when you go in the room and mm-hmm. you've done all your homework, you've done all, you know, you've gone through your process and looked at the DNA and come up with the creative thread and so on and so forth. How does it, you know, walk us through being in the room, you know, with the CMO at a company?
So day one is a conversation. It is my understanding of your brand based on my research is this. And I want confirmation from that CMO, from his development director, his
or her
director there. development director or correct, you know, because there's so many creative people of all genders and ethnicities and everything else. So thank you for.
No worries. We have two female listeners. So I just wanted to make sure that they were acknowledged.
And I could be reached at you. But seriously, you know, we start that dialogue of making sure that I understand what is your DNA. Afterwards, we go back and what my creative team, we start to tool together a over 30,000 feet presentation. And as it's like creating a piece of a statue. We want to chisel that down until it is something that myself and the client feels is right on par with, you know, their direction. Because at the beginning of each fiscal year, you know, they have a goal. Their goal is to increase in the vein of Kraft Foods, for instance. Kraft Foods, a client of mine. And they want to increase their shopping experience by 2 items per shopping visit. And so I knew that's a huge ask. Right. Kraft at the time had 18 different product lines under what we considered a brand of one company. So that may be Nabisco, that may be obviously Kraft Barbecue, mac and cheese, mm-hmm. but things that may not have the name Kraft on them and people aren't aware that they are Kraft. So my job was to find a way to, at each experience, a shopping experience, for you to put at least 2 more items in there. So what we did is we created what was called a Craft Kitchen. Craft Kitchen was a mobile kitchen experience that I used a celebrity chef, and we built this amazing Martha Stewart-esque kind of kitchen that went out to different marketplaces and large venues. And we encouraged people to understand with the use of Kraft products, we can do an A1 sauce souffle, or where the food's marinated with A1 sauce instead of it just being put on top of a steak.
Right.
Or
you're making me hungry.
Yeah, man, I'm thinking
the same way. And Mark's actually a good cook. I don't know if people know this about you. Were you sponsored by Kraft? Were you the celebrity chef on the...
No, G. Garvin. G. Garvin has a show now called Road Trip.
Okay.
It's so funny you mentioned that. My appreciation for the art of cooking is basically because of that tour. We were on tour for two years.
And isn't that interesting, though? I was having this conversation earlier. You know, as marketers, right, your job is to take a crash course in whatever your client's business is, right? Mm-hmm. If whether you make shoes, you make headphones, whatever it is, you need to, and you develop this deepened appreciation for the product or for the service. And but the fact that you took it into your home, right, like that's, you know, that's also pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, to the point that I'm at the point of plating now. And I don't know if you and the listening audience understand plating, but it's the presentation of food.
Right.
And so I'm at that level. I've gained an art for it and appreciate it. I like it. I'm at going to the store buying special knives and cullery now. So
this has
gone somewhere different than I anticipated. But
it's great.
I'm actually really interested in.
Oh, well, you're not just a marketing machine, right? You're a real human being. So yeah. You had these diverse interests, and hopefully you stick around and make us something, you know, out of your. What is your specialty in the kitchen? Like, if you picked one thing, you're like, you need to have the Mark Brogdon.
Oh, I'm a good baker. I'm a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker.
Yes.
There you go. It's kind of hard to say because now that I'm into plating, I pair foods based for me on presentation. So
right.
If I'm making steak, well, I'm going to make a black peppercorn, garlic marinated steak. But then what's going to complement that? So I'm going to make a sauteed spinach over au gratin or whatever I'm doing. I'm trying, you know, as marketers, we're real visual people. And we tend to be creative in all aspects of our life. When we get dressed, we dress creatively. As we know, our outward appearance is an example of who we are internally. So
right.
It's the first line of sight. Now, we build that same kind of thing into brand strategy. We know the consumers are watching the brand, so we dress the brand in a way that we know that they're going to
support. It's really interesting you say that. That's one of the reasons almost every interview I started off by asking, what is your personal brand, right? Because you are, you know, you exude the way you think about problem solving,
right,
the way
right.
you see the world, and, you know, like you mentioned, you know, clothing. Robert and I at one point actually had a shoe competition
that I destroyed him in.
Feel free to say that live on the air. That's fine. I'll give you that live for now. No, he did beat me. We basically had a shoe competition where we would like wear a different pair of shoes each day, and whoever lasted the longest without a repeat, you know, won. And, you know, I started pulling out flip-flops and house shoes and all kinds of stuff. I did the best I could. But, you know, I tend to be a mood dresser. And, like whatever mood I'm in is that, you know, like I have on a tie today.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I think I'm the same way. Like, how you feel that morning
right.
is how you dress.
But yeah. But also, some people don't do that, right? When you talk about marketers, Mark,
right.
it's like, you know, you see the world from a Stockholm perspective, from a Detroit perspective, from a Disney perspective, and depending on where you're going, who you're talking to, what you're going to be doing for the week, it's all a creative mindset.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty awesome.
And I live that mantra through everything that I do. It's even the style of car I drive or how I, you know, dress that car. And it's not that I'm doing it for anybody else. It's really, you know, I know what my personal brand represents, and I try to dress it that way. And I try to dress everything in my life that way.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So from an experiential standpoint, right, you talked about this tour and those kinds of things. What should people be thinking of, especially, you know, whether your brand or whatever product or service you have, what should people be thinking when they enter a physical space, right? They're creating a physical experience for.
Let me make sure people understand what experiential is, because that's a buzzword and, you know, we talked about
it. It is a big word, right? It's like people.
You know, experiential marketing is really the consumer engagement of a brand or product. So what you want to make sure in the use of that word, what we're talking about, you don't do any less or more marketing. You actually are diving into an area that you're driving consumers to either purchase a product. You're using marketing through live experiences to either drive an online experience or direct into retail, brick and mortar, or something like that. So you have to be very, very careful in how you do so. They can get turned off if you say, we were talking yesterday about faith-based marketing and experiential and faith-based. Well, that's a very touchy subject, because once you start realizing that you are
free baptisms, just come on by.
You know, for every prayer, you get a mac and cheese sandwich. You know? So you have to be careful though about, you know, that. So you really have to understand what experiential means,
and right,
that it is a true art to experiential.
You said something earlier too when we were talking. You look at, because I feel like in some cases, digital experiences have replaced, mistakenly, in my opinion, have replaced some experiential. I think everybody needs to be in the face of a consumer physically at some point.
At some point, yeah.
You know, and you said the phrase, I'm going to see if I can.
360?
No. You said virtual experience. Like, digital is a virtual experiential.
Exactly.
I can't even say it right, obviously, but
you hit it on the head. I think now social media is a virtual experiential.
I kind of said it right. Robert was looking at me.
Not as eloquently as I put it.
No, you did. You knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, the tie compensated, but they can't see in the listening audience
that I'm an idiot.
Yeah, you are. So, you know, the social media experience, you know, it's almost like watching, I think there was a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger where they had a virtual, you know, love interest for his co-star. And he could picture it so vividly through this use of holograms and everything else that he actually believed he was there.
Right.
I think through Facebook and some other, you know, Instagram, sometimes you can transport your mind and say, I was actually at this concert last night because this person did such a good job of taking pictures, images, and narrating.
Right.
So but it should never replace a live experience. It should complement and also pair with a live experience.
Question. To your point, I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I actually am a social media manager here, so, you know, social media.
At Sideshow, not for Innovation Crush, but also for Innovation Crush.
Okay, well, anyway.
So your name is Robert, they call you Bob?
No.
So I'm thinking Sideshow Bob, but...
Sideshow Bob.
See what I mean?
Boom.
Wow.
The idea is just...
Let's keep going.
Okay.
But anyway, so I was just thinking, you know, like how... You guys are talking about like an experience and an actual event and being like there. And I was just thinking, like, people hire photographers, you know, videographers. I wonder when we'll come to a point where we hire like a social media manager to actually go out and like live tweet, you know, like post on Facebook, post on Instagram. Because there's so many people that, you know, they really do kind of follow you on these social platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. It's like there's an opportunity for brands to own that part of the experience and not just let the fans and the consumers do it
dictate,
for them. It's great that they, you know, that they do it, but you're touching on that whole idea of, you know, funnel it in through, you know, to our experience.
Exactly.
So that you,
cause you know, like, at the same time, you could snap a photo, but you would obviously want, you know, your wedding photo to be done professionally.
Right.
To that point, you know, like, you might have a couple people who can't make it out to your wedding that would want to hear, you know, what's going on. You might not be the most tech savvy person, so you might want to bring someone in who can handle those sort of needs for you.
What do you think?
In my opinion.
Well, I think you're talking two different things. You're talking on a personal level versus a professional business level.
Right.
Okay, so from a personal level, I think that if you get too pretty with your personal pictures and it looks too professional, then you take the intimacy out of really what happened at that wedding.
It's very true.
I think from a professional level, though, as we design campaigns and we design it with a social media spin in mind, we need to have a photographer or a digital writer, a copywriter for digital. Right. We need to have a meeting with them prior to the event to say, these are the shot selections that I'm looking for, and this is the content I need you to text out, because it then needs to follow up with, when you go to my Facebook page or my social media site, do this and this activation or activity happens. So it has to be, as we talked about before, a 360. It has to be thought of in advance. Mm-hmm. If all you're doing is posting pictures and you got, you know, 100,000 people following you and there's no activation or call to action as a result of that post, then you've wasted an amazing opportunity.
Right.
You know, we did a program with Axe under the leadership of Walton Isaacson Agency. We did a series called One Night Only Concerts, where, you know, Axe sponsored this concert series, which was a, you know, show up at this destination within 2 hours of us posting where it'd be, and you can see an artist such as My Chemical Romance meets Sammy Hagar or whatever the case is. Mm. And so they use their social media to do a call to action, show up here. Their fan base knew about it, and this is in 4 cities across the country. When they got there, the first however many people were given tickets to this amazing show, location to be, you know, told by this next layer of social media. Once you came through this trail and come on the output of it, is that now we've done an SMS campaign. We got your analytics of who you are, and you see this amazing concert, and now we communicate with you. But if all you're doing is doing a good concert and you're saying, hey, sponsored by Axe, and there is a banner and skirted tables, there's no analytics to that, and you can't take anything away from that. You can't
there's continue to market to these people. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think there's always that opportunity to take the experience that you're creating a step further. Because at the end of the day, there's ROI. Somebody has to answer for it. Either that agency isn't coming back because, yeah, it was fun and people talked about it. Yeah. Unless you're just looking for awareness. Like, if awareness is your goal, that's great. But, you know, the minute it – but awareness – can also easily couple with some sort of conversion,
right?
Whether it's a share, a like, a sign up, a purchase, you know, and you'll find that it, like, if you create the right sets of brand experiences, the fans will go there. Like, I mean, to your point, it's like they followed these cookie crumbs to, you know, to no end, right. You know? And you know, in some cases I know, and there was a transmedia series in Norway where, like, they ask people to show up, give us your ID, put it in the bag, and get on this bus. And, you know, they ended up at a concert, which was really awesome. But, you know, diehard consumers will go the extra mile for you just because, as long as you have that authentic kind of connection with them.
Right. And if you leave them at the door with, thanks for showing up, and we may call you back some other time, then there's another brand around the corner.
Sounds like the date I had the other night.
Yeah, it looks like it too. They'll go, you know, they try to be as loyal as they possibly can. I mean, artists and music is a great example. You know, they love you when you're on top. And if you stop that that artist and fan engagement, that relationship, for too long, there's another artist that could show up and take that spot.
One other question. So I look at a lot of things and I go, for a lot of companies, marketing is an afterthought, right? Like, oh, we thought of this product, or we thought of this, you know, this thing, or we, you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z. And then it's like they've gone 80% of the way. And then it's like, oh, well, who's going to do the marketing for us? How important is it for you, especially with the clients that you work with, to be as upstream as possible? And, you know, what is the importance of being there early in the process, or is it important?
It's one of the things I tell Disney all the time, from at least a multicultural perspective. It's harder to fix a problem than it is to be in the room as we are doing creative development. Because at that point, you know, if we're developing a under the sea ride at Disney World, and what may seem very obvious to Hispanics who like louder colors, but if you have muted colors all under the sea experience, it may not resonate as well. And you're saying, well, but it's under the sea. Well, there are colorful fish, there are colorful rocks. And those are the kind of things that in the creative development room, if you have the right, you know, diversity of ideas and people, you can fix it from the beginning. But it's hard to go back and fix it later after all that's been, you know, been decided upon. And now you're trying to do a quick fix and appease, and that's never good. So to answer your question, I think that marketers need to be in the room from creative development to.
Yeah, because you have to think about how this product will live in the marketplace, right? Like you're creating the experience. And like, yes, it sounds great. Like it's a ride, but at the end of the day, people are going to experience it. And what is that? And are they going to talk about it? Are they going to take pictures? Are they going to, you know, participate in social media and so on and so forth? Really quick, you've made a transition of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. Going from experience, not even transitioning from it, but diving a little bit deeper into technology development. Can you talk about what that's like? Are you taking a picture of me with your iPhone, by the way?
No, what I'm doing is recording myself being on air.
Recorded. Wow.
Amazing.
It's a selfie.
That's a mind blow. I'm recording myself being recorded.
Exactly. And it's an amazing experience because what I'm doing now is using this platform to also increase my brand. So if you are looking
What about our brand?
What brand?
Innovation Crush, man.
What is that?
Okay.
No, I'm excited about being here, and I just want to record it for posterity's sake. What was your question?
What did I ask him, Robert?
Uh-oh.
No, it was just a pop quiz. Just making that transition from, you know, into the technology space and technology development, and also again a product that's being developed and it has to enter the marketplace. What's that experience like? Tell us a couple of the things that you're working on in the tech side of things.
Okay, so I'm working with two very amazing products right now. One is called Qubey, which is Qubey, Qubey.com. It is a...
There's so many meta tags on this, this
yeah, I'm putting you guys to work. Qubey is a communication, total communication platform. It is actually a software that you download to your desktop that aggregates everything that you normally do in a browser experience. So you no longer have to use a browser to access content that you have told the internet that I want you. I don't need to go to www.everyday just to find that content that I said, well, you know, come out and tell me when there's something relevant towards my interest and likes. So it aggregates it in your menu bar. You open it up and it all comes out to you. All your social media right there for you. If you like an artist, that artist can then walk across your desktop in some rich media format or a JPEG or just a MP3. But come out and tell you, hey, I got a new song. Click on it. This is what could happen.
That would have been perfect around the Rick James, Dave Chappelle time.
Yeah, exactly. And we can still go back and get it. It's historical. We can still do it. But and the other one is Songstagram, which is songstagram.com. And it is an app that we'll be releasing within the next month and a half. And very excited about it. It allows any music lover. It's a social singing experience, so it allows you to be able to go into your devices, any device, your laptop, your desktop, your tablet or cell phone, iOS and Android, and to pick from a library of music, to upload that song, sing over it, videotape yourself, use filters, as Robert talked about earlier, use filters to make
auto-tune.
Your own video. No auto-tune.
Oh,
no
man.
No auto-tune. This is a real app. So you can then take that content and then post it to all of your social media. You have the ability to have followers who follow your profile. So whenever, again, you have a new video that you'd like to share, you know, they'll be notified in all different formats. So the good thing about it is that you got a billion people creating music-related videos on YouTube right now, and they use a secondary player to record the music in the background, and then they try to sing over that music and hope it mashes up. Yeah. This app does everything for you.
Are you going to give us an example of the app and singing?
No.
No? Okay. No.
Although I will say, well, easy, buddy. I will say that Mark Brogdon does have they recorded a promotional video for it, which is actually really funny. So I don't know if we follow you on your social media, they'll find the video that you starred in.
Yeah, you can go to either your Facebook Songstagram page or go to YouTube and look for the word is click. The search word is click.
Yes.
CLIQUE, click. And that's just we're doing a series of spoofs on what if I were the star? And then as we pull back into my realm of reality, then I'm sitting at my desk singing this song, daydreaming about being that person. And this is what I really sound like. And then afterwards, the tagline is Songstagram, there's a song in all of us.
And that's a Mark Brogdon line, right?
Yes, there it is.
So I want you to reflect for a minute on this entire amazing conversation. And finish this phrase for me. Innovation to me is
ever changing, ever evolving, and necessary for life.
It was so quick and easy. It was good. Robert, do you have any questions for the Brogstonator?
Favorite quote?
Oh, I don't know if I have one.
What?
That's a great quote. I don't know if I have one. Get to the chopper.
I mean, I quote Boomerang all the time.
Yeah, Mark quotes like movies. I don't think any of them are appropriate for.
There was a show on when I was younger called Dream On, where the kid sat in front of the TV as he was growing up, and he lived his life through examples that he saw as a kid watching TV. And I kind of live my life that way. So I know every sitcom. I know every movie, every commercial. And I quote him every 5 seconds.
You're like a virtual cable guy.
Exactly.
So I want to thank you for coming out and spending some time with us. This has been really fun and informative. I don't know if you have any final words or you just want to say adios.
But, I really enjoyed spending some time with you guys. Again, if you have an opportunity, listeners, go to QB, QUBEEY.
Here we go.
We won Best in Show.
We want a check, by the way, just so you know. We will want a check.
Okay, it'll come from QB.com and Songstagram.com. And again, I think everybody get a lot out of it, and we're excited to be here. So thank you for having me.
All right. So thank you again, everybody. This has been another episode of Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
You listen to us next time. Thanks. Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.